Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
One term reserved only for certain college football units. It's got to be put to the ultimate test this coming season. Or not. Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. We got spring football tomorrow, and I mean a fair amount of it. And there's some next weekend as well. There might be four or five SEC games a week from tomorrow. And then anybody with the sense that God gave a barn cat, you're wrapped up. But that's not the case. There are some that have chosen, and so whatever, they'll play after. But for the most part, we'll be wrapped up. Like I said, just pile of games. You have to have pluses, like an ACC Network Extra or an SEC Network Plus or ESPN with a little plus, the little yellow thing beside it, for almost all of these. Like Alabama and Ohio State, I mean, Fox, we've talked about that. So there's some where, you know, just Gen Pop can get it. For the most part, spring games, you've got to have a plus. You've got to have that next tier of what you have already been paying for. When I say that there is a term that's reserved, it's not just blue bloods, because a program of average to above average sort of consistent achievement, they can have an angle enough that you say even an above average program at one spot, you can use this term. And so for a unique mix, an interesting mix of levels of programs from the almost good to the elite, there's a term that certain units, I've used it on the show, and it starts with a pause. The term is following the departure of at least a couple of NFL players from one position group on the previous year's team. Pause. Next. At Ohio State, receiver is one of those. Tailback at UGA was one of those. Nasty, like mean-spirited, snot-covered offensive lineman at Kentucky. I mean, they're around, man. The units, whether on a blue blood or just a program with a particular angle to it, units where one NFL player left and next, the next guy is right behind. Many of those have been threatened in recent seasons, and it's the cash and the option to chase it that can kind of get in the way of that. There are some, like tailback at Georgia, it used to be next. You'd lose, was it Nick Chubb and Sony Michel? Am I keeping this in the right order? Was DeAndre next? DeAndre Swift next? And then you went from DeAndre Swift to whoever the next running back, NFL running back after. Like, yeah, boom, 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 boom. And now, then it didn't go that way. And part of it was Kendall Milton got hurt, and part of it was Dejon's style of play, at least we thought. Part of it was that you were playing a freshman, and then you were playing a freshman who wasn't necessarily a five-star, and then you were playing a walk-on and giving him some carries, and then you started moving a wide receiver to tailback. Folks, when Georgia has a – who was it number 82, I'm trying to remember? When Georgia's at that spot at tailback, it's not next anymore. When we're all used to like 300 pounds of just ticked off meanness, it'll chew your kneecaps off. Being a Kentucky lineman, and he moves on to the Miami Dolphins as like a fourth round pick. And we're like, he was first team all SEC, but he's not this big, huge, giant, hulking first round left tackle because he's a Kentucky lineman. So he's kind of grimy, but he's tough and he's an NFL guy and he's gone. And because it's Kentucky, next. No. I have seen various tailbacks, Davis certainly, but various tailbacks have really great, some great Saturdays and some good seasons. I haven't seen him pass block, and I mean a soul, in a couple of seasons. Brock, you have fun with that. The Kentucky, was it the Big Blue Wall? Was that their name? Yeah, that's not true anymore. And there's always a lag, isn't there? Because when the last one or two left for the league, oh, it's the Kentucky offensive line. Next. I didn't say that when it came to corner at LSU. Because, folks, this is beyond threatened. Like, any DBU stuff at Louisiana State, that's on VHS tape. All right? That's on History Channel. Corner at LSU, that was so blatant that I didn't say, next. I was like, who's this guy from McNeese State that's going to start at LSU maybe? And there was a whole bunch of kids that got brought in, and it hadn't worked yet. Kelly talked about corner and how he believes this year we have some continuity, and they have some, I guess. Whatever. Just play better. Don't give up so many huge plays. Be better up front, get pass rush, have Harold Perkins finish with 10 and a half sacks. So, I mean, there's a lot of layers to the onion. Sure, I get that. Play better at corner. My gosh. DBU, no, it's not next when it comes to corner at LSU. And like I said, there's always about a two-season lag before we realize, wait a minute, that wasn't because, like, the Saturday, I'm an Arkansas fan or a Florida fan or whoever, and the Saturday that we played Kentucky, they didn't run the ball on us, and we sacked them four times. I thought, woo. And then so you look at the game notes or online or you listen to the color analyst, and he says, and they go, they're missing a starter today at guard. And so you think, because you watch your team every week, that Kentucky, oh, yeah, you know, they're still the Big Blue Wall, but they just had an injury. That guard was out that day. I heard our color analyst say it. No, the guard was out that day, but he's not that good. And the tackle used to be a guard, and the center's a freshman. We only get the perspective most often to the opponent from where they are in our 1 week, and so we think, oh, yeah, they're still Kentucky. It takes a couple of years for everyone outside of that fan base to realize what's what. How many of us looked at LSU and went, yep, corners, they got them. And even when it was Eli Ricks was still there, you're like, why didn't he play in the way he did last year, or the way we expected, the way we wanted, or the way we thought? Folks, there is an exception to this. LSU's wide receivers. It is still next. I just watched Kayshon Boutte, and as much of a, I'll say, knucklehead, potential felon, but I don't know that, but potentially, as much of a knucklehead slash felon as Kayshon Boutte may be, we had somebody on right after he got apparently found out, busted, whatever, about the betting on himself. I said, 1 to 10. Where does your surprise meter land on Kayshon made a bad decision? He said about a 2. But on the field, he had some wonderful moments, and most of them were concentrated in his first season as a breakout. The Ole Miss thing happened, but he had other moments. He had other entire Saturdays, and they became sporadic, and we all kind of looked at it, and there was like he had a kid one weekend, and then another weekend he just didn't play, and then maybe he was injured, and then he was angry, and then there's all kind of stuff going on with Kayshon. Do you know what Kayshon Boutte was, though? He was a supremely talented wide receiver, and there was a window where Kayshon Boutte, folks looked around, was like, well, my gosh, he's the next LSU guy, and then we got so used to the knucklehead stuff or the inconsistencies from Kayshon, but he was a fantastically gifted guy. Kayshon's the in-between guy now. Kayshon is the in-between guy among LSU's wide receivers the past six seasons. If you go back to the 2019 team, I watched Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Terrence Marshall, I think the next year. Like, I mean, one guy after another. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he caught a lot of passes. Randy Moss's kid. I mean, as NFL, bam, 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 draft pick, player, pension, Pro Bowl, all of this stuff gone off that 2019 LSU team. And I looked at it and I was like, next. And I was kind of right. not to that level, and there was dysfunction, and Miles Brennan was the quarterback and not Joe Burrow, and you can't overcome Ed Orgeron and et cetera, you know, only so much, and COVID and so many other things. But do you know, after we had the in-between guy be an unbelievably talented player like Butte, they're losing Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. And I think Malik Nabers, there are scenarios where he is the first receiver off the board. I think those are attention-getting scenarios. Being the second receiver off the board is not a bad thing. And I've seen where he realistically, people think 6 or 7 or 8. You take a receiver that high? Folks, that's just not a normal thing. And then Brian Thomas may be the next, maybe. The third receiver off the board. Marvin Harrison, who's an NFL guy already and has been for probably 2 years. And then two LSU receivers are the next ones off the board, and I think LSU wide receiver is still next. I've seen this before, and this time the new names who are replacing the most recent ones, it's Kyren Lacy first and foremost, and we know him and we have seen him, but we have seen him in a supporting role. He's been a pip, no longer. Apparently, he's just been, ripping up folks this spring by every person who has seen him the past month. Like, he's decided this will be the season of Kyren. Behind Kyren, I think Chris Hilton is most likely to take advantage. His speed is like SEC sort of scary, like hide under this table sort of scary. And he has waited. Nah, he hadn't waited his turn. He hadn't won the job yet because he was like, wow, Brian and Malik are good. And so he just wasn't able to get in there. It's a crowded depth chart, and a lot of kids, in fact, I'll say most kids have said, all right, 2 years of this, Hilton out. That would have been the tact for most. He's still there. I thought Shelton Sampson, and maybe it will be Shelton. August can do some things to kids. Shelton Sampson, but he's been running with threes, and that surprised me. Now, I say maybe August, but maybe August Shelton Sampson be somewhere else. I don't have any connection or info based on Shelton Sampson other than I was expecting to read about him kind of taking a step this year and, like, I'm going to plant a flag. Some of these snaps and catches and NFL game checks, et cetera, let's be real, some of these are going to be mine. I haven't heard any of that about Shelton Sampson this spring. So I said August can do some things. Yeah, April can do some things as well, especially when you're like the fifth or sixth receiver. I'm going to give you one more name to look for. And I will say for an impactful season, and I believe I'm really understating that, Xavien Thomas, he's already produced at this level without nearly the stability, the transfer from Mississippi State, without nearly the stability, and I'll say the benefit from the sideline. The quarterback play that will be throwing the ball to him, the surrounding talent. I believe Thomas may be the real 1A because, like I said, Kyren has decided, all right, this is my season. This is my leap into the NFL season, and that's fine. I think he can cash in on that too. The 1A or maybe the 2, I think it'd be Thomas. And if I'm wrong, I think that's even better for LSU because I know he can play. And if he's down the trough a little bit because others have stepped up and become piggies with the snaps and the catches. Oh, yeah, there's freshmen too. Folks, they're losing two all-timers, even at a place like LSU. I don't know. First three receivers off the board, two of them were yours, and they're both in like the top, I don't know, 12 or 13 or 15. Folks, that is an all-time. How are we going to replace those guys in Baton Rouge yet again at this one position? Next. All right, we're going to take a break and jump into it on this Friday.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on this Friday. Yesterday, I was talking about O.J. Simpson passing, cancer got him. And as I understand it, neither the Buffalo Bills nor the San Francisco 49ers acknowledge that on their social media channels? Okay. Someone had sent me a link to an article online, newspaper article, No Perfect Solution. After O.J. Simpson's death, how are the Bills dealing with the franchise alum's complicated legacy? It ain't complicated. He killed two people, including the mother of their two kids. So that's not complicated. The touchdowns don't matter. I've talked about O.J. in a separate round. I think O.J. is probably one of the top five NFL running backs ever. And in a separate realm, I can give you an evaluation of him, but there's nothing complicated about his legacy. Like the yards and points and all that. Like if I give you the legacy of Barry Sanders, because Barry basically retired when he still could play, disappeared for like 15 years, and then showed up funny on the Heisman House commercials. Somehow. There's nothing complicated about Barry's legacy. It's kind of simple. He can make you miss. OJ, it's not complicated for a totally different reason. Like what counts with Barry, because Barry's like, nah, I don't want to talk. I just want to go back to Wichita. I think he lives in Wichita. I don't mean to be silly. Can you get in a lot of trouble in Wichita? I can't imagine as much as you can in Brentwood. And Barry's like, yeah, I'm going to go back home. So Barry resurfaces, and so I'm just picking Barry because he played the same position, sort of the same breakaway runner. And Barry's like, I played, and then I didn't, and now I'm back on some commercials, and so I'm a pitch man, and we can get along now. We only evaluate Barry on the long runs and the touchdowns, and so that's not complicated, and it's kind of universal. Wow, what an all-timer, because look at the yards and the touchdowns. OJ did something that means what is all of our evaluation, because all Barry has let us evaluate him on, really. Like Herschel Walker says, you can evaluate me on a lot of stuff. All Barry has allowed us to evaluate him on is his yards and points for the most part. And so that's all we got. OJ gave us a lot more, to the point that the yards and the touchdowns, yeah, those don't matter. So we're going to talk a little Arkansas football coming up in about 10 minutes. Kentucky, they have a spring game-ish thing going on. I tell you what, some coaches have found a way. A very, very, very surprising turn in spring games and formats, et cetera, for me at least, because canceling or just not having it or saying we're going to take a 15th practice, it is sort of a thing, but if it's sponsored and marketed and you want TV inventory, you have to do something. So we'll talk about Kentucky spring game. And then we have Ohio State as well deciding stuff. So we got a big next several segments here on Chuck Oliver Show. Heath, how's your Friday?
Well, speaking of Ohio State, Chuck, normally, when you think about the guys who are going to do things, going to say something that might be controversial, you don't typically think about running backs coaches, you know? That is not the case, though, at Ohio State. Carlos Lachlan is their new running backs coach. He came over from Oregon, pretty high-profile hire at the time, because obviously that's now an in-Big Ten move, and Oregon's considered one of the better contenders coming into the conference. Lachlan proceeded to say, quote, when he got there, I'm going to keep saying it. This is the worst coached position in football. It's terrible. Guys hire anybody to coach this position that are recruiters. Carlos Lachlan is not a recruiter. I am an elite relationship builder. I coach this position, and I'm a ball coach. Now, there's two things there. One, he went third grade. Carlos Lachlan.
He's it for emphasis.
Carlos Lachlan is. Wow, okay. So that by itself is kind of interesting. But naturally, there's some other people who coach the running back's position who said, excuse me, I couldn't help noticing that you basically are implying that all of us are inferior to you. And so Curtis Looper coached a little bit of ball in his day over at Missouri, telling the website Football Scoop, quote, who exactly is he talking about? Maybe it's that way in the Pac-12, not in the SEC. The people in this conference that coach that position, and goes on to talk about people like Frank Wilson, LSU, Gillespie at Alabama, and so forth, talking about guys who, like Tennessee's running backs coach, just getting hired by the Jaguars.
Yeah.
And so he basically said, hey, buddy, what's your deal? Who made you the king of the running backs coaches? I know this much, Chuck. There's going to be a lot of people now this year. Those running backs better be doing some amazing stuff at Ohio State, or else the people in the profession, I think, are going to be looking to point it out really fast.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's something that I have talked about as well. Del McGee was the reason he had to either he skipped the line or he took what was there, because he never was getting the leap to coordinator from running backs coach, and that was the reputation, is he'll get you signatures and he'll, you know, protect the ball, work your legs. There's a lot more to it, and as he says, you know, in the SEC, there's a lot more to it. But Dell was stuck in that. Like, he's a living example, and so he was looking to be a coordinator, I don't know, a year, two, three, four ago, and then he would be in line for an actual chance of success sort of head job. Instead, he's at Georgia State because he realized, the only way I'm going to advance, I'm not going to be a coordinator, so the only way I'm going to advance is to take a head job at a position like that. So it's just a really tough scenario. It still exists. He spoke out about it, put his name on it, which is interesting.
It's interesting, and the other part of it too is, Chuck, what he says, there is some truth to it, the notion that the running back position has been one of the spots that you typically want a recruiter. But that doesn't mean that the two things are exclusionary. You can be a great recruiter and also be an excellent coach, and that's the part I don't get about it yet. Are there some guys through the years that probably were on a staff at the running back spot more because of their recruiting ability than pure X and O coaching? Yeah, that's probably fair, but he didn't just go broad brush, man. He threw an entire bucket of paint on the whole profession.
Wide receiver as well. And think of it this way. When you play left field for about 8 or 9 years, they've got some options of what they can do for you. Move you to first base is one of them, and then move you to designated hitter is the other. Just because you are more able to do that, there's less required compared to something else. There's a belief that running back and wide receiver are such instinctive positions that if you have Adrian Peterson or you have, I don't know, Julio Jones, what are you really going to tell that guy? Now, there's a lot you can tell him. There's all kinds of things. But the belief is that because those two positions, more than maybe any other on the field, you can show up and just be a stud in the minds of some folks. It has been thought that it's easier to coach those positions, so it has kind of funneled down over the decades to that, like Damian Craig. Damian Craig's like, when was I going to get a real fair chance? And outside of going to a program outside the fringe, there's a chance that you probably aren't.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It is Friday on the Chuck Oliver Show, which means we are right up on the line of a slew of spring games. And if you got the Plus on your cable network, I got ESPN Plus, or I have SEC Network Plus, etc., then you'll get the games. Hammerlock. Gordon Solie, growing up, Georgia Championship Wrestling, I watch him on Saturdays, and I learned about a hammerlock, and that means, man, it's over. Checkmate, done. Put a hammerlock on somebody, you can end a match. I believe Talon Green has put a hammerlock on the – I was told that he's coming in, and he's already played, and he's got stats, and he's the handpicked choice, and, boy, he's going to be the quarterback. And then all of a sudden we invented a quarterback competition, which I guess, you know, you have to make a kid win the spot, but – apparently, he's put a hammerlock on it. A lot to talk about regarding Arkansas and their spring game. I want to head out now to the Duncan Newsmaker line. Our truest reporter for Arkansas from the Democrat Gazette, it is Tom Murphy. Tom, welcome back, friend. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's always great to talk to the great folks of Atlanta, my hometown. I always love it.
I appreciate you carving out some time. You got a spring game tomorrow, plenty for you to tap keys about. Let's talk about Taylen Green. Was this merely a case of, okay, everybody has to win the job, so he had to win the job, or was it a legit competition? Because apparently hammerlock is a fair word to describe his grip on the QB spot.
And Chuck, I think you got a fine read on the situation. It was a little surprising that from the very moment spring started, he was with the ones and he hasn't taken snaps with any of the other units. And the real competition is Jacoby Criswell and Malachi Singleton, Georgia kid, for the number two spot. So I think it's a product of modern day coaching roster management that you don't just come out and say it, even though the whole team knows it. You don't want kids jumping in the transfer portal that quick. But, Taylen Green, look, here's what I think about him. He completed about 57-58% of his passes at Boise State, which is, it's okay. But in the SEC, I don't think you've got to improve that. And so Bobby Petrino's charge with Taylen Green is to bump that up into the 60s. KJ Jefferson spent the last three seasons around 65-66%. You can live with that. If they can get Taylen Green in that range with his additional running skills, then I think you got something.
Let's talk about the running back group, because there are some names, maybe from Arkansas with DeBinion, who we got to play last year. There's a Utah transfer that everybody likes, and at least Arkansas fans, maybe there's another scenario. Something they're used to is a running back with a lot of different guys getting their hands on the ball.
Exactly, and they've done that to great success. Yep. Last year, not so much, but the year before that and the year in 2021 and 22, great success. The Utah transfer you mentioned, Jaquindon Jackson, 6'2", 230-something, a big back. They love him. He is in the starting mix with Rashad DeBinion, another Georgia kid. I think those guys are 1A, 1B, but they had a kid come on late from Florida, Isaiah Augustov, who is a fine running back. And then they got a big back from the state named Braylon Russell. He's about 6'2", 240, big kid, and Sam Pittman loves those hammer backs. So I think that they will be every bit as stacked, as long as the transfer portal doesn't really hit them coming up, they'll be stacked at running back.
And if I'm right, is sixth-year Dominique Johnson still in the mix?
I am so sorry, Chuck. I forgot to mention him.
He's like luggage. You're just used to him.
Exactly. And you know what? I wrote about him today because he had a great practice. He made a great down-the-field catch in traffic. He's running around with a brace on his knee. He's had two knee surgeries. He had a wonderful 2021. When he was the starter, yes, he's still around, so that gives you five. I don't expect him to go to the transfer portal, where they did lose two really good backs from the offseason. So they got five guys I think you could go into an SEC game with.
I want to ask you in particular about one receiver, and of course it's a transfer, but from last year, Andrew Armstrong. Tell me where he is now, because, maybe it takes you a minute, maybe it takes you a month or a season, but where is Armstrong now? Because word is from folks out yonder that he's turned some heads this spring.
Chuck, you keep up with the Razorbacks, and if you're that good with the other, 15 – programs in the SEC, then you're doing great. Andrew Armstrong had a really solid first season here. He was the lead receiver, 700-something yards, I think five touchdowns on a bad offensive team. Yep. He has been phenomenal. He's making one-hand catches. He's making catches in traffic. Now, he did have a hamstring that slowed him for a couple of weeks. Don't know if he'll play tomorrow, but he is to me, every bit as good as any other one, number one receiver in the conference. From there, they got a quick guy in Isaiah Satania. He's good. Tyrone Broden has missed some time with a family matter, but he's really improved himself. So he's 6'7". Armstrong is 6'4". They got a kid named Isaac Tesla, who's 6'4". Not as fast, but, it is a representative SEC receiving core in my eyes. Maybe not the top of the league, but certainly not a one you'd think of as near the bottom.
All right, well, comment about the man putting it all in motion, Bobby Petrino. Now, here's the weird thing. It's not unusual that coordinators are very limited in their conversations that they're, quote, allowed to play, have with the media. Well, he's not a regular situation. Bobby Petrino at Arkansas, it's just a little different. But how available to media has he been?
Okay, so we had an introductory press conference with him where he talked about how much he's really loved this program. You know, the same things he said at Louisville and so on over the years. But I don't know. I really get the sense his family was happy here with the outdoorsy stuff, living at the lake and things like that, and that maybe this could be his final destination and a chance to, you know, the A&M job. I mean, he has said it. He did not have full reign. They had to use Jimbo Fisher terminology last year. They were an okay offense, but not great. I think he wants to really flash again in the SEC. So we talked to him in his introductory press conference. We talked to him last week again. And so I hope we again talk to him in training camp and hopefully at some point during the season. I hope Falcons fans probably have, you know, this is what, five or six coaching iterations ago for the Falcons, which is my team. And he came here and had, you know, look, Arkansas football in 2010 and 2011, that was a peak that they hadn't seen since their Southwest Conference days. And so there's a certain touchstone here, even though in college football, Bobby Petrino's name is, you know, not looked upon well in many quarters. Here at Arkansas, he's got a section of the fan base that will always be appreciative for what he did, and they hope he can resurrect that.
I want to ask you about one, I guess, position group. Maybe if you want to talk about the Georgia transfer specifically, you can. But talk about defense, talk about the front seven, talk about the linebackers. And if you want to give a comment on T. Will and the job that he did, because they weren't great on defense, but I was like, they're a lot better last year. So there's sort of a simmering confidence from me on Arkansas's defense. But talk about the backers and whoever else you want to.
Yeah, I agree with your explanation or your introduction there on T. Will. Much better than they were the year before. They have a shortage of linebackers because right now the transfer Xavier Sori from Georgia is almost like the veteran guy, and he hasn't been in college football that long. But they've got a bunch of sophomores they like, and even though they look pretty good out here, when you get into an SEC game, if you're running around with a bunch of sophomores that haven't had a lot of playing time, and then Xavier Sori is your main guy, then you might be lacking a little bit. But I do like the physicality. They've got a kid named Brad Spence who had a pick six in last year's opener who I think is really going to come on. So I think him and Sori might be your two. But they have got to get back in the transfer portal, in my view, to bulk up the depth at that position. I mean, last year they had Chris Paul. They had Antonio Greer. Yep. They had Jaheim Thomas. And some depth there. But what happened late in the year, the Auburn run game just shredded them on the edge. And I think the linebackers came under a lot of heat for that and maybe didn't get over that. And so a lot of them jumped in the portal, including Jordan Crook, Paul, and Thomas. And so they have to restock there. You know, the cornerbacks, their starters, Jalen Braxton, I like. I think Jaheim Singletary, another Georgia transfer, is in the mix for the opposing starting corner, along with Keon Stewart, a TCU transfer from last year. But the depth there is a little concerning. I think their D-line could be sneaky good with depth, but they have to get someone in the portal at tackle. Remember the name Cam Ball. There's a lot of Georgia connections on this team. Cam Ball is another Georgian who comes out in his Falcons, you know, his Braves gear and stuff. He could be one of the better D tackles in the conference. And if he played for Georgia or Bama, he'd probably get a lot more ink. But he's a really good one. And Landon Jackson came back at end. He had three sacks in the Bama game last year that was a lot tighter than people thought it would be.
Oh, yeah.
He's back. So, you know, to me, sneaky decent on the D-line.
Tom, I appreciate all this input. And we talk college football, and I had to go with that. All right, let's talk hoops. Final question. give me the unfolding, like, on your cell phone, your timeline, who you were texting with, whatever, that, like, Musselman leaves. I don't know. I guess Chris Beard said no. If that's true, this is, like, the pivot of all time to Calipari. Tell me how this unfolded for you personally.
All right, well, to be honest, Bob Holt is our main basketball guy. I kept in touch with things, but I wasn't the one having to reach out. So that's Bob Holt. But Hunter Yurecek said adamantly that the only offer went to Calipari. However, gauging the interest of Chris Beard and checking with his reps and all that kind of stuff happened. I don't know how far they got with Jerome Tang at Kansas State. I like him. The Kansas State team 2 years ago was really good and fun to watch. I don't know. It would probably have been a more lukewarm reception for the fans on him. And then I also think, you know, various gauging of interest of a few other guys. Hunter Yurecek said he probably talked to around 8 guys. Okay, so, but Calipari, to me, even though we understand he's maybe in the twilight of his career, he sounded very eager to get back at it. Arkansas fans are giddy that they did this, and then Kentucky's had to, you know, fish around for their next guy, and, you know, it looks like Pope. But very, very giddy that Calipari has come here and, you know, the potential for what they can do in the next few years.
All right, so the reason I asked that, and just one final comment, tell me, like, where Sam Pittman and football are right now, because they got a spring game tomorrow. The baseball team's like, what, 20-something, 29-3, number one in America. You just hired Calipari, and they're supposed to get excited about, like, Arkansas playing Arkansas. Like, tell me where this game is tomorrow.
Yeah, you knocked all that out in a nutshell. So at the introductory press conference for Cal the other night, they were going to introduce all the head coaches who were there in the audience. And they said, please hold your applause till the very end. Well, they introduced Sam and Pittman first, and there's some applause. And then Dave Van Horn was second, and the place erupted because he's so beloved here. And so Sam got eclipsed a little bit there. But the truth is, he's just got to prove it. They've got to win again. And I was just thinking about this. If they can get to 8 or 9 wins, you know, the fans will be happier. It's close games. When they fell off in 2022, it was because they couldn't win close games. And so if they can do that, then his star will be, you know, rising again. Obviously, he will enter the season on a hot seat. And people will think, well, if things stumble, what will they do? Will Petrino be an automatic push-up? We don't know that, but that would seem a scenario that could take place. You just got to prove it again.
On Twitter, Tom Murphy, ADG. Thomas, I appreciate your time, friend. Thank you.
You betcha, Chuck. Take care. I always enjoy it. See ya.
All right. Thomas Murphy, Arkansas Democrat Gazette. So there, I wasn't going to ask him about hoops, and I don't know that I would about anybody else. I guess they are getting Mark Pope. Is that right? Heath, is that right? Mark Pope is, yeah. So,
yep.
Okay, Kentucky, you ride, man. I tell you, it was chest out a couple of weeks ago. I don't know. Calipari, he's staying, but boy, he better be glad he's got that contract, really. Really, where do those words go? I would like them back. So it's just all unfolded. And so Arkansas baseball is number one in America, and they've taken it out on some teams, by the way. Like this time last year, I think LSU was number one this time last year. Yeah, they're having a different season. But Arkansas is number one in baseball. They've just got Coach Cal, and then they've got a spring game tomorrow against the backdrop of expectations. Wants of 7 wins or 8 wins, expectations of I hope we get 6, and boy, we could get 5. What will we do? So that's that. Always appreciate Thomas coming on. We break. We wrap up Power 1 next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Been fun just with him at the quarterback position, how he's grown this offseason, just being a pro in the building up here all day. He's got great focus. He's continued to grow fundamentally, a lot better grasp of what we're doing and the why behind what we're doing and understanding the things he's going to see on the other side of the football.
Josh Heupel, come back, Nico. And they got a spring game tomorrow. One thing for all of us, my hand is raised because I have just waxed about this kid. One thing for all of us to keep in mind is they don't, you know, Tennessee needs more from its quarterback in 2024. Okay, we all agree on that. Now, but let's really think about that. Tennessee needs more in the passing game from its quarterback in 2024. And, Nico, I don't think this is really provocative even. Like, he was good throwing the football in the one game where we got to see him. He was scintillating, running the ball, just gliding around back there. So there's a good, it was a quality combination, but his work, and you can be a Johnny Manziel and 1,000-yard guy, or Cam Newton, and he might have run for 1,500 yards. You just be a game changer every Saturday running the ball. Absolutely. In Josh Heupel's offense, that's great. And I need you to throw the ball, like really be a game changer with the ball. And Joe Milton wasn't. Tennessee last year, if you care about passer efficiency, which is a good number to at least as a general, you know, indicator, which I try to go arm's length and all that stuff, but passer efficiency rating is good. Tennessee was 9th in the conference. And just they didn't make the plays they needed to. And then Heupel, either I don't think he ever got to that play calling sweet spot. And I commented on that in week one against Virginia. I was like, oh, keeping cards to his chest. No, that wasn't it. Never happened where they really unleashed it. So they've got their spring game tomorrow, and we're going to find out a lot about them. We know what's going on at Tennessee as well right now. And I've talked about how the different sports overlap and just it's always interesting for me, at least, to observe the perspective. I've talked about, you know, LSU got spring game, but Alex Box got a 3-game series going on. I don't know. And you're number one in America? Maybe it's different. How interested are we in what sport? If Kirby can, you know, push the 93K button, how do these, you know, does a Final Four affect North Carolina and NC State? How's that do it for the spring game? At Tennessee right now, there is another there's another story that I guess I want to say I'm surprised we're not all paying more attention to. Well, I don't know. You don't win. Are we aware that all these levels of just to the moon, like the arrow pointing north for women's hoops popularity, are we aware that every last drop of that is occurring without the Lady Vols? They just fired their coach about 2 weeks ago, and they have a new coach now. And so that's a big story in Knoxville. It's supposed to be a big story. If we're paying attention to women's basketball now, that's supposed to be a big story. Tennessee on court, the results have not held up their end of it. And so it was Pat Summitt forever and ever and ever and ever. It was just Pat Summitt. And now this is the third person since Pat Summitt. So Kim Caldwell is now, but all this spike, it was Louisiana Tech and Tennessee. Those were, I think, Old Dominion cared about women's hoops. Schools, if you cared about it, you could excel a little bit. Now it's a lot more difficult. In Tennessee, they're trying. They just hadn't had success. So Tennessee, all of this is going on without the major program that goes back the furthest as far as having elite success. What up, Heath?
Yeah, you know, it's funny too, Chuck, because if in the SEC tournament they don't just completely botch an end-of-game situation against South Carolina, they manage to simultaneously not guard the inbounder and also not guard the person standing at the top of the key who was able to get a clean look off for three. If they just do that right, they knock off South Carolina and the coach probably still has her job. So it took a miracle three anyway, but it really is a case where it felt like one moment there got the women's coach previously there at Tennessee fired. And in the end, that's the whole problem for them is South Carolina has turned themselves into what Tennessee was there with Pat Summitt. Tim Pernetti is the new commissioner of the American Conference and a guy who is very well regarded for his background as somebody who worked as an AD at Rutgers, even though he had some problems there, wound up leaving in a scandal situation, but still did a great job, got them into the Big Ten, which is a borderline miracle, has a TV executive background. This is considered to be a really nice hire for modern college sports for the American. But Chuck, for folks who don't remember, you taught English in high school, correct?
Yep.
So you know, words mean things. They have actual meanings. This is a quote from Tim Pernetti at his press conference yesterday. Quote, "We're going to turn the conference room into a literal shark tank." Well, I would just say that that is a poor idea.
That.
That's a poor expenditure of money if you're going to turn the conference room into a literal shark tank.
Is he a Bond villain?
I don't see any evidence that he has plans to destroy the world. He's not wearing a black turtleneck or anything.
He's got a monocle and a white cat?
It's like, words mean things. Why did you say literal? No. Just say you were going to turn into a shark tank. Everybody knows about the TV show. You're turning into a figurative shark tank. You want things to happen in deals. Understood. Don't say literal.
Yeah, you'd think somebody who still is in the education business. I mean, he's in the money business, but he still is in the education business.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.